When I was a teenager, one of my chores was to cut and haul wood for use in the wintertime. Now, we had normal heat in the house, but the fireplace and later the wood stove that my parents had always augmented that and made it much more comfortable and, of course, saved money from having to buy the fuel oil. But for a typical winter, we would burn, depending on how cold it was, how long the winter was, anywhere from 2 to 3 cords of wood. Now, that's an old measurement. If you don't know what a cord of wood is, it's roughly closely stacked wood, 4 feet wide, 4 feet high, and 8 feet long. So that's the rough dimension. So we would need 2 to 3 of those. Now, we lived out of town. My parents had 5 acres, so we had a fair amount of land that was just trees. And so we would mark and cut the dead trees and use that as firewood. And so you'd go back into the woods with the chainsaws, you'd cut the trees down roughly into about 18-inch long pieces, and then you'd also have carried the sledge and the wedges back, and you'd split that wood. But because it was terrain that had creeks and streams running through it, and because that part was lower on the property than where the house was, it all had to be carried out by hand. We couldn't use wheelbarrows or a tractor with a trailer. Couldn't climb in the snow. So we cut the logs, split the logs, hauled the load after load after load of wood by hand up to the house. So at the most, I could carry about 30 pounds because you're walking about a third of a mile carrying that up to the house, and you'd have to repeat that time and time again. And so by the end of winter, you know, I was in pretty good shape. Of course, naturally, we're stronger when we're younger, but now I get tired just thinking about that. That there's an interesting thing to consider along this line that hopefully we get wiser when we get older. About a year ago, my youngest brother and I, my dad was still living in the house that he'd always lived in, that I grew up in, and he finally had gotten to a point where he needed help cutting the wood because he still continued to do that. Heat the house with the wood fire, and it's always a nicer heat to sit next to, but he didn't have the ability, the strength to do that anymore. So my brother and I arranged to meet at my dad's house on a particular day last summer and to cut wood for him. Now, the wood we were cutting at that point, they had at one point just all kinds of ash trees on his property, and the ash borer beetles had killed all those trees, so they were standing dead. They needed to come down anyway, so we agreed, as I said, to meet on a certain day. My nephew, my brother's middle son, was also there with him, and so the three of us got to the business at hand of cutting and splitting and stacking that wood. Now, we didn't have to go so far, and it was on the uphill side of the property, and it wasn't snowing, so we could use the tractor. We had chainsaws. We had log splitter to use. And so the three of us managed to cut down 2 full-size trees and a couple of smaller ones. And we cut those into sections the right length. We split, moved it all to the back patio, stacked it. In the course of about 6 hours, we had 3 cords of wood stacked on his back property, on his back patio. I was reminded of the instruction in Proverbs 20, verse 29. I'll just read that for you. It says, "The glory of young men is in their strength, and the splendor of old men is in their gray head." You should get wiser when you get older because you don't keep your strength your whole life. Wisdom should come with age, working smarter, not just harder. But what does any of this have to do with the upcoming Feast of Pentecost? Well, I want to start the message today by asking a simple question. How strong are you? Depending on your age, depending on your lifestyle, where you live, how you live, that answer is very different, isn't it? We tend to think of strength like me carrying all that wood up to the house when I was a teenager, and of course then splitting it. The old adage is that when you cut your own firewood, you get heated twice, right? Once when you burn it, once when you're cutting it, because you can work up a pretty serious sweat. I'll just digress here for a moment. Don't ever try to split Osage orange. I don't know how many of you know what kind of tree that is. You don't have those up here, I think, in Wisconsin. In Ohio, they're all over the place. We called them hedge apple trees. It looked like a wrinkle apple. They weren't any good to eat, but they were green. But that wood has no grain. It's all woven. It's just a mess. I made the mistake a couple of times of trying to split that. One time I buried 3 wedges in a piece before I could get it apart to get the wedges out. Anyway, you learn, don't you, over age, over time. But if strength is like me carrying that wood when I was a teenager, it fades, doesn't it? I don't know that I could do that physical type of energy to the level that I used to do it now. But if strength fades, does it fade spiritually as well? When we're young in the faith, we tackle so much in changing our nature and our character, don't we? God opens our minds and suddenly everything's new, everything's exciting, and we see the things that we need to address. And we have almost at times a frantic pace when we're first called. We call that first love. Everything that is new and everything that we're excited about. But the pace of that can slow down over the years, can't it? Humanly, we can't keep that kind of energy up for extended periods of time. So spiritually speaking, how strong are you? Now, the last 3 months have certainly been interesting, haven't they? No one saw this coming. No one could have predicted this. At one point, life is just going on as it seems it has for some time, and then everything changed. We've been removed from each other in fellowship. And as I said a few weeks ago, for introverts, this is heaven. For extroverts, this is hell. But I miss getting together just to see everyone, to know how they're doing. We haven't been able to assemble before God on His Sabbath and holy days like we have for all of our called life. What have you seen in your life during this time? Did you see that maybe you're weaker in faith than you thought? More fear, doubt, concern, that you couldn't stand still and wait on God? But on the other end, maybe you saw how strong you were, what God has done, and how settled you were. So as we approach the Feast of Pentecost, we need to consider the aspect of our spiritual growth. How strong are we? Now, spring has been slow coming to Wisconsin, isn't it? Every year I'm an optimist, and every year I'm disappointed. Spring will come early. It rarely does here in Wisconsin. In fact, up until this past week, we didn't have even 2 days in a row that approached 70 or higher. And as a distraction from my normal work, though, I enjoy working in our yard on projects. It gives me something else to focus on, gives me something physical to do, because I spend most of my days sitting. Normally, I sit when I drive to Sabbath services, Bible studies. I sit when I visit the brethren. I sit at my desk calling or emailing brethren, working on sermons. So much of my time is sitting. So when I get a chance to work outside, I'm usually sore the next day. Yesterday, I was not in agony, but every move reminded me what I did on Thursday. Thursday was a busy day out in the yard because it was so nice. I worked muscles I don't normally work. We can forget about them. In this past year, have we seen where we might not be very strong spiritually? If we're not addressing those areas in our life, then that becomes a weakness, doesn't it? And potentially a vulnerable area. On the other hand, after Thursday, I saw areas, things in my body that were stronger than I realized, stronger than they had been in a while, because I've been trying to address some of that. But I want to look at some aspects of our physical muscles today and consider our analogy of spiritual strength. I think it's well known that skeletal muscles lose their strength if they're not used. We see that, especially as we age, what we could do. As I said, I couldn't carry 30 pounds of wood repeatedly over the course of a day like I did when I was a teenager. I simply don't have that strength anymore. But it can be worse than that. If we disuse or don't use a muscle long enough, it begins to atrophy. This means that muscles need to be used to remain effective. To have a muscle become the strongest, it must be exercised. That's a common known thing. But the best way to do that is to work the muscle against resistance. It has to have something to pull or push against for it to break down that muscle and make stronger muscle. So let's turn to 1 Timothy 4 and just be reminded of a comment Paul made to Timothy. We know that life can be full of struggle. At times it can seem like life is nothing but struggle. And that's not because God doesn't care. We'll come back to that thought later in the sermon. But I think to a large degree, God allows that struggle because he knows that in the struggle, in the resistance, that we can grow spiritually strong. Because, again, physical exercise will only last for a short time in the scheme of things. In 1 Timothy 4, in verse 8, to begin with, Paul here writes, he says, "For bodily exercise profits a little." He doesn't say it doesn't profit at all. It just profits for a little while. "But godliness is profitable for all things." We won't take this body into the kingdom, will we? We're going to be given a new body. So as healthy or as strong as we might help this body to be, it's only for a time, 70, 80, or more years, depending. But godliness is profitable for all things. That's what we're going to take with us. The mind of Christ that's been developed in us, the godly character that's been developed in us. Continuing, it says, "having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come." That's our calling. To be given that spiritual body, to be in the God family. He says, "This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance. For to this end we both labor and suffer reproach, because we trust in the living God." That we know in spite of what we will go through, it has purpose. That's one of the things that's missing in the world, isn't it? They have trials like we have. We can look at the world and say, well, why don't they have trials? They have trials. It's just they don't see trials the way we do. They don't see a purpose. They don't see this analogy that I've brought here today of how it will strengthen them. Some do at times, but they don't see it in a long-term meaning of life context. To continue here, it says, "because we trust in the living God who is the Savior of all men, especially those who believe. These things command and teach." That's why we come before him on his Sabbath day, his holy days. Why we're reminded to study his word on a regular basis and to pray and meditate on it. Now, to go back to the thought, we still need to take care of our bodies, don't we? It's a precious gift. I ask God, when people come to me to be anointed, I ask God to please give them health so they can do this, what we're talking about. They can focus on the spiritual things. They can develop that righteous character and not be distracted with some of these physical things that we can go through. But more importantly, as I say in those prayers, we need to take care of our spiritual calling. We need to be strengthened in that way. Again, here in verse 7, it says, at the end of the verse, "exercise yourself towards godliness." Now, the Greek word here for exercise is gymnazo. It might sound a little familiar. We get our English word gymnasium from this Greek word. The Greek word literally means to practice or train. In a gymnasium years ago, especially in this context of the New Testament time period, that's where they trained for the Olympics. It's where they trained for these sports. Have you ever considered how much life changed for that first century? Many of them grew up going to the temple. That was what they were familiar with. At least on the holy days, they would remember that connection, go there and be taught. They were used, though, to a more passive engagement with God, weren't they? If you went to synagogue, there weren't that many that would read the various divisions of the Old Testament for the readings. Certainly, if you weren't a priest, you weren't involved in the instruction. You weren't involved in the sacrifices unless it was your sacrifice you were bringing. So it was much more passive. But that all began to change, didn't it? Over time, as the Jews began to realize that they were not going to destroy this upstart religion as much as they hoped to, then these individuals were kicked more and more out of the synagogues. They couldn't even fellowship with these individuals. And then by 70 AD, the temple was destroyed. They couldn't even go to the temple anymore. And then they had to flee Judea even before that. God told them. He gave them certain understanding. When you see these things happening, flee. And it was a good thing they did, because Jerusalem became a very ugly place after 70 AD. But they had to adjust, didn't they? No longer was it this homogeneous group of Jewish converts. God began to bring in the Gentiles. And that influx began to challenge some thinking they had, challenge what they thought they understood with what God expected of them. They faced serious heresies over time. If you ever have time to just read through Paul's letters, recognize, pay attention to how much he is addressing false teaching. By 20, 30 years, even after the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, that was already a huge thing they were facing, both in and outside of the church. They grew, didn't they? They had to. They grew in spiritual strength. They grew in that strength because they stayed close to God, however. It wasn't that God allowed these things to come into their lives and he just kind of watched from a distance. He was engaged with them. And in order to be strong physically, as I said, our muscles must work against resistance. This is why astronauts lose so much muscle mass. There's not enough resistance in space, gravity to work against. And spiritually, we gain strength through this resistance as well. This is our calling, isn't it? The things that we must resist from the culture around us, the attitudes around us. That's a more and more challenging thing just there. Let's go back to Jeremiah 15. Again, God allows these struggles in our life so we can use that as resistance to help us be spiritually strong. Jeremiah 15, and to begin in verse 15, he says, O Lord, you know, remember and visit me and take vengeance on me for my persecutors. In your enduring patience, do not take me away. Know that for your sake, I have suffered rebuke. Jeremiah certainly did face it, didn't he? He prophesied for a long time. They got tired of seeing him coming. He probably knew their thoughts before they even opened their mouths because they had said it so many times previously. They weren't listening to him. How tiring was it for him to constantly bring a message that he knew they weren't going to respond to? And yet he did. He was persecuted. He suffered, as he says here. I suffered for your sake. Verse 16, your words were found and I ate them. This is expression, imagery, to say he internalized them. It's what strengthened and sustained him, God's word. Your word was to me the joy and the rejoicing of my heart. And if I could leave you with nothing else in this sermon message today, it would be this. Do not let the cares and distractions, the anger and frustration, all of the rhetoric and the posturing and the anger and everything else that we see in the world around you, us, affect you. We're not going to change it. We know where it's headed. We have more important things to be considering. To continue in verse 16, for I am called by your name, O eternal God of hosts. Notice, he reminds God here what he did. I did not sit in the assembly of the mockers, nor did I rejoice, if I can add a thought to it, in their calamity. Do I want to see this world go down in flames? No, I do not. It will not be a pretty time when tribulation fully comes. I would hope that none of us would do that, but unfortunately, mankind has drifted so far from God, that's the only way they're going to learn. But to rejoice in it? No. Even though, as he says at the end of verse 17, for you have filled me with indignation. Should it upset us to the point of knowing how disappointing it is to God? Sure. But that's something we have to be very careful with, because it's not us the world is sinning against. Verse 18, so he asks these personal questions. Why is my pain perpetual? Have you ever asked yourself that? God, will this ever end? I've been at points in my life like that, gone to God, and as we heard in the sermonette, I said, I don't know what to do. I've done everything right. I'm trying to listen to you, have you inspire me, or whatever the case may be, but this is just not going away. Well, those are times that God has not left us. He's still there. And it's something that we're strengthened through if we keep the right perspective. He says, and why is my wound incurable, which refuses to be healed? Will you surely be to me like an unreliable stream and waters that fail? In the winter, they're raging. In the summer, they're dry. He says, is this the way it's going to be with you? Does God care? Well, hold that thought. Again, we'll come back to that a little bit more. But let's go next to Ephesians 6. We have to remember who we're fighting against. Is it God? No, it's not. The problem we get when we get frustrated is that we usually take it out on the wrong people, don't we? We kill the messenger. Have you ever said that? You've gone to somebody with some bad news and you just look, I'm just giving you the message, you know. But that's not really who we're fighting against. Ephesians 6 reminds us who we are. Ephesians 6, verse 12. For we do not wrestle. That's a resistance sport. You have to have a certain strength, not just brute muscle. There's also strength of wit. You have to know your opponent. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. Notice what we do wrestle against. Against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness in this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. How do you wrestle against that? How do you resist that? These are spiritual things. We're flesh. We want a heads up, don't we? I've had to come to terms with that in my relationship to God because I've said over the years, can I at least have a better understanding of what you're doing? I don't even know where this is going. Well, it's not my place to know. God doesn't owe me that. We're wrestling against different things here, aren't we? So verse 13, we're reminded we need different weapons. Not weapons of the world, weapons of the Spirit. Again, like muscles, though, once we gain spiritual strength, it takes longer to lose it than it did to gain it. Most people don't know that. Let me say that again. Once you develop muscles, it takes twice as long to lose it as it did to gain it. But it's painful to gain it, isn't it? We think this is the end of the world. If you've not exercised for 20 years, you're not going to get strong in 2 months. You got 2 years to catch up with. But after you gain that back, it's going to be there. Even if you ignore it, it'll be there for a while. But to really develop strength, we need to keep going, don't we? Once we're in shape, then, spiritually speaking, then there are all kinds of positive benefits, just like there are with exercising. Resistance training is one of the best things older people can do because it helps maintain the bone density. Your bones don't get weak. But also, as you develop muscle, you don't have to be, you know, a bodybuilder. But to have good strength, good consistent strength, you tend to sleep better. Your mind tends to be clearer. All kinds of physical things. Why is it any different spiritually? We talk about the peace of God that comes upon us. Why does it come upon us? Because we've been strengthened spiritually? It's not giving up to be still. That takes its own strength. David pondered this question. Let's go back to Psalm 139. He pondered this on a regular basis, it seems, on a personal level. But he had to come to a point where he had great peace with God, didn't he? David was a man of action. David wasn't used to sitting around. As a young man, he would protect the flock. We think that was a very passive, boring job. And what we can lose the perspective of from our modern perspective is that shepherding in his time was a very dangerous thing. Wolves and lions, those are apex predators. And yet he would go into battle with them to protect his flock. He protected people. And so for him to come to this point was a challenge, a growth that he had to go through. Psalm 139 and verse 14. He says, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. There were periods of times as a shepherd where he would sit and simply watch the flock and observe. And he probably had time at night to ponder the stars and the creation that he saw on a regular basis and the sheep that he herded, even in his own body. And he recognized, as he says here, that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, that my soul knows very well. Now, this statement we tend to think of in a physical application, and that's not wrong. Our bodies are amazing things. But as we also consider this, let's look at it from the spiritual perspective. We're just as fearfully and wonderfully made spiritually as we are physically. The process that we go through spiritually. But let me rehearse some of the physical things first. There are all kinds of functions and processes our bodies do routinely that we become ignorant of. Once we eat, do we consider the digestion process? Only if it doesn't work right. Normally, we don't think about it. I'm hungry, I eat, I'm satiated, okay, now I'm good. I don't think about it till the next time I'm hungry. Our bodies take that food, though, and do amazing things with it, don't they? The nutrients they pull out to create various compounds and hormones and process that into energy and all the various things that it does with it so that our bodies can function. How amazing is eyesight? This is one area of creation that evolutionists still can't fit into their theory. It's simply too complex. All the processes of the eye itself, how it connects to the brain, how we process information, all of it. It doesn't work in the evolution theory. Then there's the process of pregnancy. On a physical level, pregnancy should not work. It's a parasite in the body. But God makes it work. Two cells that join together and bring forth life through a process that should not work, but it does. That's fearfully and wonderfully made. And as we consider all the wonderful things about these bodies that we have, how wonderfully and fearfully made are we spiritually? Look at what God has done with us. Even at baptism, that little bit of his spirit that he begins to put in us, look at what changes. Look at what we're able to understand and comprehend and be a part of. And as we grow spiritually, God begins an amazing transformation, doesn't he? God takes this temporary physical life, and by imparting his spirit, he begins an astounding transformation. Let's look at that in Romans 12, verse 2. You know, humanly, when we spend time with people, we don't notice a lot of change, do we? You have to be absent from someone for a time to really notice change. So you haven't seen somebody for... maybe it was last year at the feast. You see them again at the feast and they've lost 20 pounds. You're going to notice that, aren't you? Hey, looking good. I noticed you lost a lot of weight. People see the opposite too, don't they? Man, you've packed it on. That's the lament people are having right now as they come out of quarantine, to stay at home. You know, how much weight have you gained? We notice those things. You don't see nephews or nieces or grandkids or whatever for a while. And next time you see them, it's like, wow, how much they've grown. In Romans 12 and verse 2, we have this reminder. Paul says, do not be conformed to this world. This is part of our spiritual strength, isn't it? Resisting the world, not letting the world change us. That was what I mentioned earlier. Don't let everything that's going on, all the fear in the world and everything accompanying with it, don't let that change us. It's not the right thing. But notice, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This is the calling we have, to let God work in us, to change us, transformed and renewed, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That word transformed is a very interesting word in the Greek. It's metamorphosis in our English. And the best example of that is that butterfly. You take that caterpillar that creates this chrysalis, and it basically takes every cell in that little caterpillar and turns it into the basic elements. It's just a liquid goo. And all of it gets rearranged, and a butterfly comes out. But even in that process, if you see a chrysalis, and they've done these studies, you see that caterpillar, that new butterfly trying to get out, and they've cut the chrysalis to help the process. the butterfly never develops the ability to fly. Because in the struggle of getting out of the chrysalis, it pushes all the fluids out of the wings so they can be as light as possible when they stretch them out and they dry. In the struggle is the development. More often than not, we take our bodies for granted, as I said earlier, don't we? Until they break down. But they're an amazing part of God's creation. He gives us movement in these bodies through the muscles that we have. And even in that complexity, we don't think about things. But did you know that there are more than 360 muscles that simply work on the spine and the ribs to allow for general movement, breathing, and even connecting to how our head moves? Do you ever think about that? Well, I've got to move this muscle and that muscle and then this muscle to make that happen. No, we just do it. Our brain knows. That's an amazing thing. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 2. What we put into our body is important as well. The old adage that food is medicine has great truth in it. We can strengthen our body or we can harm our body by doing too much or too little of the right things that we ingest. And in 1 Peter 2, in verse 2, we read here, as Peter writes, "As newborn babes, desire the pure milk of the word, that you may grow thereby." And ideally, even in this, physically, God has created within the mother of whatever baby is born that there are the right nutrients, right amount of fat, the right elements within the mother's milk to help that baby grow. Spiritually, it's the same. As he says here, desire the pure milk of the word, God's word. There have even been studies done that have shown that you can actually, for a fairly long time and not compromising your health, live on milk. That's assuming you don't have an allergy to it or some other physical problem, but that's even amazing to consider. The milk of God's word. You will never go wrong staying with the basics. Rereading the basics, relearning the basics, thoroughly grounding ourselves in that. Then when we use a muscle, to go back to that analogy, when we use a muscle to fatigue, there are many things that are happening. That's the soreness we feel. That's the soreness I felt yesterday after working in the yard all day on Thursday. That's a good thing. It doesn't feel like it. But the muscle is repairing where it's hurt. That muscle tissue is being broken down because it's not good enough to do the work that you were trying to do. And so that's why we ache. But when it repairs that muscle cell, it only repairs on the outside surface because that's where most of the action is. But if you repeat that process long enough, it begins to work down into the muscle because as the outer portions begin to be stronger, they pull on the inner portions, they're not strong enough, they get torn down. All that process works towards the core of the muscle, whatever muscle it is. That's the muscle rebuilding. If we work it long enough, it goes all the way to the core. And you think, well, that's it. Then the muscle's in peak condition. But that's not the case. What's interesting is that if you continue that process long enough, once it gets to the core, then it starts the whole process again from the inside out. So you go from the outside in and to the inside out. That's the best conditioned muscle then. That's what professional athletes, Olympic athletes, that's the type of muscle that they have. They're in peak condition, the best they're ever going to be. And I asked back when we read in Jeremiah 15 if God cares when we suffer and struggle. And the answer is yes, he does. He cares enough to take care of us through those times because he knows that we need this to be stronger. It's like that butterfly. If we intervene, it actually becomes weaker. It's actually a death sentence if we try to help it in a way that it doesn't develop properly. So we must be strong, spiritually speaking, to grow to become like him. It's going to be uncomfortable, like those muscles that ache. It's going to feel like it never ends. But it does. It takes strength of character to reject Satan's influence, doesn't it? It's all around us. It's going to catch us unaware at times because the world reflects it. he has done a masterful job of magnifying the worst of human nature. But that spiritual growth doesn't happen in a vacuum, does it? Because it can't. We have to be part of the process. And so God allows trials and difficulties in this life to help us grow, to condition us spiritually. He needs to help us to be strong. And this is the comforting part of this. We're not in this alone. God, again, doesn't allow these things and then say, well, let's just see how they take care of this. He knows what we can handle. In fact, he promises that he won't give us more than we can handle. But he knows that we need to go through this to be spiritually strong, for that spiritual muscle to be in peak condition. So let's look at more verses along this line. Let's go back to Jude. And since Jude only has one chapter, Jude 3, he says, "Beloved, while I was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation," this is what Jude originally had in mind. And I'm only guessing here, but maybe it was some thought of encouragement or reminder of the calling. He says, that's what I originally wanted to do. But he said, I found it necessary to write to you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once delivered to all the saints. This is the flaw in Christian dogma, as it's commonly taught, once saved, always saved. If there was no need to contend earnestly, then that would be true, wouldn't it? But it's not. We have to contend earnestly. That means to struggle, if you look up the words. Now, again, it's not because God doesn't care. It's actually the opposite. We need to contend so that it matters to us and the right changes take place, the right growth takes place. Exhort you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once delivered to all the saints. God doesn't change. And we need to continue to stay close to him and contend, as Jude says, for those things. It's when we get comfortable that we can lose sight of the important things. We can get injured. Let's go next to, well, since we're so close, let's go to 1 Peter 5 next. 1 Peter 5 and verse 10. Peter, as he ends this first epistle, says, "But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you." Now, the question is, how much is suffering for a while? We want that to be as short as possible, don't we? If at all. But notice what comes through that suffering. It's not just passive endurance. I'll just sit here till it's over. No, it has to be engaged, like working in the gymnasium. Because through that suffering, as Peter writes it here, notice, we're perfected, we're established, we're strengthened, and we're settled. Suffering, if I can summarize, through these trials of life, helps to make us perfect. It gives us spiritual strength. It also gives us perspective, doesn't it? What bothered you as a teenager probably doesn't bother you now, because you have a different perspective of life, don't you? Let's go back to Hebrews 5. Hebrews 5 and in verse 14. This is probably Paul writing here, but he says, "But solid food belongs to those who are of full age." Right? You have to mature into that. The reason that newborn baby needs the mother's milk is that their digestive system can't process complex foods yet. The mother's milk helps to build the enzymes and the various things in the digestive tract to help develop or digest food in the future. So solid food comes later, doesn't it? And that's what he's writing about here spiritually. Solid food belongs to those who are of full age. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. If we're never confronted with the choice, how do we know what's good and what's evil? And the problem is not failing at times and getting involved in the evil, if I can put it that way, but it's that we need to recognize it even once we're in it. As I've said before, I think God is less concerned with us sinning than what we do about it once we recognize it. Because we'll sin. He knows we'll sin. That's the whole reason why Christ was slain before the foundation of the world. He created us. He knows what we're like. The sin is not the problem. It's how we deal with it, our attitude towards it, our desire to overcome it. And so that's why Paul is writing this here, that we have our senses exercised. Well, that's going through the motion, isn't it? The old expression, really old expression, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? I mean, how do I play at Carnegie Hall? And the old answer is practice. Well, that's the wrong answer. I can practice something wrong. I will never get to Carnegie Hall. Perfect practice makes perfect. You have to go through that process, don't you? So if I'm learning to play a piano, which I could never get my head around as much as my mom tried to help me with that, but you need to practice and say, okay, that section wasn't right. And I would hear my mom do this. She would play one section of a piece of music over and over and over and over again until she had it down the way it was supposed to be, and then it would get integrated into the rest of the piece. It's no different with anything else, spiritually speaking. The fact that we might be new in the faith and we don't know everything, that's a given. It would be unreasonable for God to say, before you can be baptized, before you can have my Spirit, you need to have all this down cold. If that was the case, why would we need God's Spirit? I've baptized people that have deep personal problems, and they know they have personal problems, but that's exactly why they need to be baptized, so they have God's Spirit to help overcome those problems. Now, if they don't recognize the problem, that's a different story. But are we exercising our senses to discern good and evil? To know what God would have us do and think and become? Because life is all about change and growth, isn't it? As much as we want it to stay static, we don't. One day you're 16, and the next day you're, as it says, you're turning down the radio so you can see what turn to take. Your mind is now completely different, isn't it? But we understand that that change is a constant until we die, and spiritually, we should recognize the very same thing. We need to grow. We need to change. We need to become something different than we are. And quite frankly, that takes spiritual strength. It's not going to just drop on us. Growth is part of our Christian calling. That's 2 Peter 3:18, right? God tells us, grow. Grow in grace and knowledge. That's active. That's engaged. It's not passive. As much as I want to become strong, I can think it from now until the day I die. I won't become any stronger if I don't do something to become stronger. And even though we face change in our life regularly, we usually struggle to tolerate change, let alone embrace it, don't we? We get comfortable. We like comfortable. We know what's coming. That's the problem when we're in bad situations. We're comfortable even with bad things when we shouldn't be. But the curious thing, the very interesting thing is that individuals who end up embracing change usually thrive in life. Why is that? Well, that's a much deeper discussion, but simply put is that they learn to grow. They learn to embrace those challenges because growth brings opportunities we didn't have before. You know, there are honestly times in my life I wish I could be 9 years old again and not have any of the cares that I have right now. But then I also wouldn't have the ability to do a lot of the things I can do now. I don't want to be that 9 year old again and have to go through all of this all over. There's opportunities, aren't there? It's not comfortable, but it is for our best interest that God allows these things because most people don't see growth as an opportunity. again, spiritually speaking, growth, change, the challenges God allows in our life are there for a lot of reasons. Developing deeper trust in God, learning what to overcome, seeing God's hand in our lives, to face things that we aren't comfortable with and learn that through God we can overcome them. Now we can see those things as opportunity to learn for obedience, but we can also see that Christ blazed the way, if you will, Hebrews 5:8, that through his obedience he learned. This is God. In fact, it's the God who created everything that he still learns and grows. I find that very encouraging. I don't want to sit for eternity on a cloud playing a harp. First of all, I'm not a very good musician. That would be awful. But after the first 1,000 years, it'd get pretty boring, wouldn't it? We're going to be engaged. God is a creating God. He's a doing God. We're going to learn. We're going to continue to learn. And in the long view of our calling, we see whatever we face, we will see eventually everything we face as small compared to what God has promised to those that remain faithful. Let's look at that in 2 Corinthians 4. You know, it's never comfortable to go through the challenging things in life, but it's almost always rewarding after the fact, isn't it? Our twins both officially graduated from college this month. Alicia at the beginning, Anson, the commencement exercises were supposed to be today. Yesterday was his last day of classes. College is challenging, isn't it? The programs that they were in certainly were, physical therapy and engineering, mechanical engineering. I'm impressed with what they went through. But it's a lot of hours. It's a lot of hard schedules. It's a lot of challenging material. But now that they're past that, look at what they can do with it. The same is true with anybody that faces anything similar like that in their lives. So in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 7, Paul here writes, "But we have this treasure in earthen vessels." What treasure do we have? God's calling. I just read an article yesterday about two young teenage boys in France were trying to find something to do to break up the boredom, and they started making something in their backyard. I didn't follow through on the article enough to realize what they were trying to build, but in their digging up dirt and trying to put together whatever they were putting together, they found a cache of gold bars. It wasn't huge in the scheme of things. It was about $100,000 of gold they found. But you know what? I wouldn't mind finding $100,000 worth of gold in my backyard. That's a treasure, isn't it? We have something even better, though. It's easy physically to forget that. But God has given us his Spirit. Next week, Sunday, we're going to rehearse that in the Feast of Pentecost. What kind of treasure has God given us? The understanding of this life and its meaning, why we exist, what he's doing, what he's offering, what we can be a part of in erasing the pain and suffering that the world currently experiences, the treasure of having his mind in us, that's huge, isn't it? He says, so for now, we have this treasure in earthen vessels that the excellence of the power of God may be of God, rather, and not of us. That God, through us, shows us what he can do. We have to do our part to remain faithful. We have to do our part, as we've read earlier, to exercise this, to practice it, to pay attention and adjust accordingly as we learn to do it better and better. But that's all part of the course, isn't it, of becoming stronger. It's worth it in the end. In 1 week, again, we'll be gathered to observe God's Feast of Pentecost. Look at what he has given to his church, his people. We can see it down through time, but I pray that you see it in your life as well. Look at what God has done for you in your life and how stronger you have become because his Spirit dwells in you. As we ponder those things, as we approach the Feast of Pentecost, and even as we move past that in another week, may we grow into the sons and daughters he knows that we can be. May we grow into everything we need to be to live in eternity with him.